פנים בציון, שרוצים בהשמיים.
I remind you again that this time in history, this time in history is perhaps the borders of Israel have never been greater than it is at the time we're reading now. Okay, it extended far north, far east, far south, and the people were extremely wealthy, as we're going to see in a few psukim here. Prepare for Pasukal. Sha'ananim.
It's going south. Did it include what's now Gaza?
Much more than that.
Much more than that.
Even into Saudi Arabia. You know. Okay. And people who are Bochim Bahar Shomron, they were sure of them, so sure of themselves that just the very presence of Har Shomron in itself will save them. Yirmiyahu made the same claim in his book when he says that the people believed that the physical walls of the Beis HaMikdash would save them. Chapter 7 of his book. And he said, you know, the walls will fall down just like you. Right? God would never destroy his own house. Oh yeah, he did in Shiloh. Okay, so Nekuvei Reishis Hagoyim Uvo Lahem Beis Yisrael. Nekuvei Reishis means, like, in the Torah you have the same, similar Lashon. Of people who are nukvim, the term for female, nekeva, also is similar to this inyan, which is a lashon of hashivas, noteworthy. Okay, nekuvei reishis.
It has to do with, the person blasting God, so things were like that.
Interesting, yes, it could be just a euphemism there. Like to bless and to curse is the same word also.
Called.
Called? Yeah, it could be. Right. People that are called. In other words, they have titles. Okay. But there, Amos has already dabbled quite a bit with the favored nation status of Israel, right? Back in chapter 3, I know you better than all the other nations, and that is what he's saying here. Woe to the people who consider themselves chosen and holy, who behave the way you do. And then now we go, this we're about to read the next few psukim are similar to what a number of prophets do. He says, Ivru Chalne Ure'u. Go up to, Chalne is one of the cities in Bavel, in the north. It's one of the cities actually attributed to Nimrod in Parshas Noach. Chalne, go up to the north, Ure'u, Ulechumi Shom Chamas Rabah, and go up east towards Ammon. Redu Gas Plishtim, go south. Any better than they are? Imrav gvulam migvulchem, even though your borders are much greater than theirs, you're not behaving any better than they, right? You're no different than those nations. A statement Amos is going to state once again in chapter 9. A more famous statement because it's Haftorah, right? Halo kivnei kushiyim atemli. Remember that? You're just like Ethiopians to me. Amos, can you take down the white tea? Mix it with the carrot.
So why does that work, that argument, like no better than the other nations? Because we know that in Israel, sometimes they're not as good.
Mm-hmm.
But they're God's people, so God always wants to...
And so therefore, when you don't behave the part, you're going to get it worse than the others. Right? I'm only interested in disciplining my own child when he misbehaves. I'm not going to punish the other child as much. I know what my child is supposed to do. I chose that, chose to discipline that child in a certain way and teach them the way I want to. The way I think children should be raised. If my neighbor's child isn't playing that part, I have no claims against them. Okay. Hamenadim liyom rav atagishun sheves chomos. Hamenadim. Look what Targum says. When someone is in nidui, that means excommunication. That they are, look at Targum. I don't think you have Targum. Sorry.
No, I have it.
You have it? Inun Merochakin. You see it?
Yeah.
Merochakin. Rochok means when you put someone into Cherim, you are pushing them away from the community. So you distance the Yom Ra. In other words, you're putting your head in the sand like an ostrich, and you say, don't worry, the evil day is far away. Nothing bad is going to happen. We're in a status quo that works for us. Nothing to worry about. It's called Minadim Liyomra. Vatagishun Sheves Chamas. And all you're doing is you're serving up Sheves and Chamas. Right? Chamas is violence. Sheves Basami means that just the downfall, the destruction, the okay. You're pushing off the evil day, but you're serving up Sheves and Chamas. Hashochvim, now look at their wealth. Hashochvim amitos shein. You sleep on beds of shame. What is shame?
Ivory.
Some translate marble, but ivory is a better word. Now, we had that already back in chapter 3, where Amos was decrying their houses of shame. Right? For Avdu Batei HaShein, remember?
Right.
Said you will lose your summer homes, your winter homes, your marble homes, your ivory homes. And I will destroy all of them simultaneously. We said that that's reminiscent of an earthquake, which could take out summer homes and winter homes simultaneously in Israel. I would put a summer home in the north, a winter home maybe in Eilat, right? And God will destroy them all at once. But look at what Rashi says about this pasuk. I can't hide from the fact that Rashi says it this way. He says, "Ustruchim al arsosam ve'ochlim karim mitzon va'agolim mitoch marbeik." Now, as you have here, is that they're Rashi says they were wife swapping, doing disgusting things on their beds. Right? So Rashi says that machlifim nishosehem zel azeh, umasrichin arsosehem b'shichva zera she'enum shalohem. The women were being impregnated by men that were not their husbands. So that's what he says. To your beds stink, right? Sruchim means stench. Eres is a bed. Okay.
So how do you get that from the verse?
Things that there's a stench in your bed. So the Medrash is going to be as creative as it wants to on that. Okay. And they're eating korim of fatlings. Agolim mitoch marbeik. Marbeik is you know, there's some people today who won't eat veal because of the way that the calf has to be raised, right? Apparently in Amos' time it was also made that way. Marbeik is a tiny pen, right, where they would leave the calf to become fat. And then they slaughter it when it's young, and then the meat is tender, and that's called veal. So they're eating agolim mitoch marbeik. There you have it. They're eating little calves from the pen. You see that Amos is decrying this cruelty to animals, this disgusting behavior, this wealth, I call it the Long Islandization of American Jewry. Excuse me if you grew up in Long Island here. What I mean is that Jews get wealthy, they move out to the suburbs, they don't have schools for the kids there, they don't have shoals nearby, they drive far out. Now they have, of course. I'm talking about in the 40s and 50s.
Yeah.
I'm
talking about.
My parents founded
a school there.
So there you have it. That's precisely where Jews made the first move. It's because of that foundation that you have it now, all over Long Island, right? And Halb and all these other places, and these are offshoots of that. So, but too many Jews didn't do that.
Right.
Okay.
Checked out to Levittown before they were revealed.
Right.
Okay, so this is what he's saying. Portim, now look at how he's mocking the wealth of the people. Haportim al pi hanovel kedavid chashvu lahem kleshir. They're sitting and strumming their stringed instruments. Novel is like a harp, or right. They're strumming at their stringed instruments, and they think they're serving God like King David. David served God with his music and his poetry. So you think you're serving God, you think it's a kleshir. He's mocking them with this, right? Hashoshim b'mizruke yayin, drinking out of bowls. You're picturing those Romans drinking from these huge, huge cups like this, picture them like this. The racious shmonim imshachu, and you only use the first press of the oil to anoint yourselves. V'lo nechlu al shever Yosef, and you're not getting sick over the impending destruction of Yosef. Why does he say Yosef here? Because the kings of the northern tribes came from Yosef, from Ephraim. Mm-hmm. So he says you do not see the impending doom right in front of you. Therefore, you people are going first. Exactly so. The northern tribes were exiled before the southern tribes. Berosh Golim. Visor Mirzach Struchim. Now this word Mirzach is a very rare word. It is not connected to Mizrach, I have to tell you, although I'm tempted to explain it that way.
The word Marzeah.
Indeed. It's a very strange word in the Bible. Let me tell you why. Because it depends on the context. In some places, like this one, clearly, it means a party. Quite a disgusting party here. He's talking about the stench, your stinking parties. That's what it means. Shruchim. And he's using a pun. Sar Shruchim, you see it?
Yeah.
Mirzach, however, in some other places in Tanakh, like in Yirmiyahu, is a place of mourning. So it's either a Mirzach is a place of mourning or a place of rejoicing. It depends on the context. But I think that they have one thing in common. And it shows that, tell me, are there any Sephardim here, I think, who behave differently than Ashkenazim on this, is at a after a funeral, especially an unveiling, there's food. Right? So what has happened, because the Christians have it, now a lot of Ashkenazic secular Jews do it also. Like they have like a whole collation, right? You ever see that? So a Mirzach is a Mishteh Shel Evel that Sephardim continue to keep. It's called Mishteh Shel Evel. And with Mirzach, the word Mirzach,
in
verse
7.
Yeah, so what is your English translation say for Mirzach? Banquet? Okay, so there you have it. The word Mirzach, it's strange in the Bible that sometimes it clearly refers to a happy event, which is obviously what it means here. He's saying you will no longer have these stinking Mirzachs. But in other psukim, it clearly refers to something has to do with mourning. So what they have in common is that they're not. It's neither festivity or a mourning event. It's a banquet, and by the context, you can see whether the banquet is a banquet of mourning or a banquet of festivity. Now, now today, I think that the custom, many people have the custom not to eat at all in the Shiva home. Some Shiva homes, they serve out so much food. The reason for this custom is because I don't want you to feel that you have to serve me. I'm coming here to pay Shiva call to you. I should bring food to you, not you serve me. Someone sitting in Shiva has to worry about serving all these people. Right? So I'd rather the first meal has to be served by others, and then all the other meals should be served by others. So, and yet, I see it more in the Sephardic world, and is that like these psukim in Tanakh, is that they used to actually serve a banquet after funeral, especially after an unveiling.
After the unveiling, is it part of custom at the unveiling?
At the cemetery, even I've seen it. Yes.
Yeah, that's what happened.
They take out a bridge table, set up the tablecloth, took out some l'chaims.
Yes.
Now there is a custom even amongst Ashkenazim after the shiva is over. You have the last minyan. They say hamakom in the last time. They get up and then they make the l'chaim in the house because that's not a shiva home anymore.
But that's what they did at my grandfather's and grandmother's. And
right, so there was such a custom at unveiling. And that's to make a l'chaim. Look, now you have two different customs in shuls. Very common. Moshe, you brought in food, right? At the shloshim. That's become more and more popular now. To actually, at a shloshim or at a yortzeit, to bring in food and make a l'chaim. The Gemara Nedarim says, those are days for fasting, not for making l'chaim, but... The Chassidish Minhag is obviously taken root. After all, who would you rather do? have a linzer tart and some sponge cake and a little schnapps or not eat all day. So you know, custom spread. But they say that the hana that we derive from this should be like ilu nisham. Okay, anyway, that's just the word mirzach. But it's called their banquets, stinking banquets. Again, shruchim, like the beds. Nishba Hashem Elokim Benafshonu Hashem Elokim Tzvokos Miso Eva Nochis Gaon Yaakov Ramano Sov Sonesi. I'm disgusted with the pride of Yaakov and I despise his strong places and his palaces. Vizgarti Irmelo, I'm going to close them up. I have the enemies ready to do it to you. Okay, let's read around now. Richard, you started this morning. How did you start today? Tonight.
Okay,
Sahaya.
Sahaya Im Yivasru Asara Anashim Bevayis echad b'meisu.
Okay, now let me tell you, the next few psukim that we're about to read are going to be very difficult to read. And I'm going to read it according to the Radak. It's clearly the pshat of what he's saying. You can read the English and you'll see it. He's saying that 10 people will hide in one house. Right? 10 people are hiding. You can picture the situation, right? In our own experiences. 10 people are hiding in one house. And there are people dying in the house. There's no food, there's disease, people are dying. And people have to sometimes knock on the doors and tell them to throw out the dead people, and we have to do something. You can't leave them in the house dead. The people used to knock on the doors and send the people who were dead inside, and look what they would do. Unisha'o, the sole survivor, or one of the survivors, Dodo, which can mean his uncle or his any relation or friend. Dod means going to be a friend, called Dodi, Dofek, right? His beloved relative or friend. Radak says it means his uncle, mamash. Umisorfo. Now what does misorfo mean? Targum means mikeda. What does yakod mean in Aramaic?
Burning.
Right? Okay. And they would burn the bodies. Why? Lotzi atzamim min habayis. Atzamim is plural of bones. Usually it's atzmos, but here it's atzamim min habayis. Amar la'asher b'yarkasei habayis. Ha'odimach. And they would say to people all the way in the back of the house, anybody else in here to take out to burn? The Omar office. When they'd say no, they're all burnt, then the person would go away. The Omar has, kilola haskir b'shem Hashem. What a pasuk. Can you believe this? Is Navi saying this stuff? First of all, the Radak explains that they had to burn these bodies because it was disease, and otherwise the people inside would die. It's not the first time that this is mentioned in Tanakh like this. There's some other place where Shaul was hanged by the Plishtim in Beit Shan. So the people of Yavish Gilad risked their lives and they took down the bodies, and it says they burnt the bodies because they were decomposed. So anyway, this is very difficult to read, but the point is that Amos tries to tell them how bad it's going to get. Now, you have to remember, he's saying this in the best of times. Who wants to listen to this, right? Imagine that he's saying this with great, great wealth. He's talking to people with homes of ivory and beds of ivory. Right? With summer homes and winter homes.
How many years would you say before the...
Well, he was about to give a hint that there is 65 years from the beginning of his prophecy to when it's going to happen. This could be already 30 years later. So, could be coming
could
up.
Be like 610 BC or something like that.
Oh, then this is happening? Oh no, this is 760, 750.
Okay. Oh, before.
Oh yeah.
Ten tribes are
scattered in the year 722. Right? Okay, so you go, yeah, you're talking Yirmiyahu time, giving us those days of Yirmiyahu. Yeah. Okay, what I want to do is understand the end of the pasuk says, Hosh, kilola haskir b'shem Hashem. So there are two different interpretations of what this means. One, the Radak says, quiet, don't talk about God now. Right? In other words, all this time you haven't been talking about God. How come now you want to talk about God? So I'm reminded by, remember I told you about Shimon Meyer, who was in Dachau. Right after he got married, he was taken to Dachau. And his wife is still alive. He just passed away, but his widow earned him. Right, so many Jews were taken to Dachau, who were just regular Jews, but they took reform, a lot of Jews found themselves together in Dachau, for a few weeks, some for a few months.
After 1938, in Kristallnacht, right?
This is even earlier. This is you taking the first wave, 33, even 34, 35, 36. So he said that while he was there, all the reformers were talking about God. They were all philosophizing, how could God do this, how could God do this? And the firm Jews were saying, how could man do this? You know, so it was a little different focus. Those who have God outside of Dachau don't talk about God in Dachau. Right? Those who have no God, who don't have much of God outside of Dachau, that's all they're talking about here. Right? So he's saying, Haski lo haskir b'shem Hashem. This is not a time to start philosophizing. Well, this is a time to just work on how to survive. What's
that word?
Asuta.
Asuta.
We learned about it today.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, so I'll leave that with that's the interpretation of the Doc, and I think that's the simplest interpretation. Okay. Some say that that's what the people were saying. Oh, yeah, when once this happens, you're not going to want to talk in the name of God anymore. You will lose your faith.
And that's what they remove them, for they will not want to mention the name of
God. Oh, that's a whole different interpretation of hus, meaning, it's from a Lashon in the Torah, actually, also. By Makas Barad, the Torah says, all those who believed in God, he nis et miknaso. That's in this Lashon. But I think the word hus here means silence.
They say they're calling Mashi.
Right. Do you have silence in the English translation? Verse 10?
No. You will say, remove them.
Yeah, that's Rashi. Good. All right, that's Rashi. Okay, Salek from Targum. Yeah, okay.
Remove.
Right. Okay. Ki hine Hashem mitzaveh v'hikah habayis hagadol resisim v'habayis hakaton b'ki'im. God will smite your houses into resisim, a small bits, and he'll smite your big houses into small bits, and he'll smite your small houses into big bits, into choppings. Now, what could do this is very possibly an earthquake. Now, you know that Amos made reference all over this book to this earthquake already, and he starts the book, Kishno Taim Lifnei Harash, a prophecy 2 years before the great earthquake. Right? There was an earthquake in 762 in Israel. Okay, so Hayutsun Vasela Susim Yacharosh Bab Karim Ki Afachtem Larosh Mishpat Ufritzta Kalulana. Can horses run over rocks? No, horses can only run over straight land. Do you think that cows can plow over rocks? This is not the derech to plow or to run. These dumb animals, right? They want to do what's expected of them. You don't. This idea is very common in the prophets, right? Remember, there's a book of Tanakh that begins this way. Yishayahu, yada shor koneu b'chamor avus b'alav. Right? Ami lo yada Yisrael lo yada ami lo ispanan. So the dumb animals know who puts the feed bag in front of them. They know how to plow. They listen to what they're told. Okay, and what have you done? Yafachtim l'rosh mishpat. Rosh means, I hope you don't have head in the translations. Rosh is a poisonous plant. Does it say it?
Hemlock?
Hemlock, good. Good. Lana is another poisonous plant. The Das Mikra, there's a little picture of it. But these are poisonous plants. In other words, justice and charity are supposed to be sweet. And sweet meaning that when you hear of it and it goes the right way, you say, justice is sweet. But here you've turned it to be bitter, like poisonous plants. Okay, Marsha, would you do your gimel? Hasmechim lo devar.
Hasmechim lo devar. Omrim halo b'chuskenu, b'kachnu lanu karnayim.
Okay, you make yourselves happy with worthlessness, lo devar. Very simplistic way of saying worthlessness, but okay, eino l'kiyum. Omrim halo b'chuskenu, b'kachnu lo karnayim. You say with our own strength. We took these horns. Karnayim is a symbol of strength. Karnei Rishoim Agadeya. Right? Karnei Reim Karnov, or the horns in Sefer Zechariah's visions that represent strength. So you think you've taken the strength of the enemy with your own chozek. Not so. Ki hineni mekim aleichem beis Yisrael num Hashem Elokei HaTzvakos goy. I'm bringing up a nation. V'lochatzu eschem. They will press you, right? Your horns will not help you that day, right? Milavo chamos ad nachal ha'arava. These are exactly the borders, the north to south in Sefer Bamidbar. They will smite you from north to south and put you the tribute and exile you. Okay, the word Arava, while today is a very famous place in the south of Israel, right? Have you heard the Arava today? The word is not found in the Tanakh outside of here, but it is in the south of Israel. So it's a review of chapter 6 is, it is rebuke against the assuredness of the Sha'ananim, these prideful Jews who are so sure of their strength. Okay? Now, right now, we're going to introduce the next section, is four visions of Amos. Okay, we'll have four visions, similar to other books that have visions one after another, Zechariah, Yirmiyahu, Yechezkel. This is what it is, Deborah. And Rambam actually says in Mor Nevuchim that this is the way many Nevuos come in the Bible in general. It's just now it's stated explicitly for us. The prophet is shown a picture. You go to a therapist's office and he shows you a picture. What is this? And you have to, you know, these ink blots or something like that, right? So I think it's just a little spurious, those tests. But anyway, so here Hashem shows Amos some signs, and then Amos has to now interpret it to tell the people. Okay, the first sign is Yotzer Govai, and we're going to have to read this historically to figure out exactly what is going on. Kohi Rani Hashem Elokim, God showed me this. V'hinei Yotzer Govai B'schila Shalos Halokesh V'hinei Lekesh Achar Gizei HaMelech. Yotzer Govai. Govai are locusts. Right? God is showing me, He is fashioning out locusts. Right? B'schila Shalos Halokesh. These words seem scary and hard, but they're not. What's lekesh is late rains, right? Bito yoret u malkosh. Usually it is only used with respect to rain, right? Here it's referring to late crops. The locusts are going to devour the late crops. Vinei lekesh achar gizei hamelech. And they're going, the only one who is going to be able to get any produce is the king. What is he saying? Who usually harvests first? The king goes out in the fields with his farmers, and he takes whatever he wants from all the fields, right? Only the king will be able to take. It means just it's coming before anyone else in the nation gets a chance to do anything. Okay? And before they have a chance, or when they, by the time they are ready to devour all of the grass of the field, and all the vegetables, and all the plants, Omar Hashem Elokim, Slachna, please God, forgive them. Miyakum Yaakov. Remember Naflo Loto Shifkum? Who will help Israel get up? So it's very interesting. Remember we looked, that's what made us watch the film, was the commentary to that Pasuk? Naflo Loto Shifkum. So Rav Yosef Kara read the Pasuk with its the greatest pessimism. He said, Israel shall fall, the northern tribes shall fall, and not get up again. At least Rashi and Ibn Ezra said it's not talking about the 10 tribes, it's talking about the kingdom shall not rise up again when it falls. Okay, fair enough. That's true. I don't expect another king of the northern tribes. I expect the next king is going to be Mashiach over all the tribes together, right? But Radak gave a pshat that fits this pasuk very nicely. Radak says that when Israel falls, she will not get up on her own. She will need help from the rest of the world. Yeshayahu has exactly that nevuah. It's the Torah Parshas Kisavah. Right, he says that you will build the Beis HaMikdash with the help of the Gentiles. You will be brought back with the help of the Gentiles. And the Gemara Ksuva says that Jews cannot return to Israel if doing so means rebelling against the Goyim. Familiar with such Gemara? Famous oaths, right? And I would answer to the Satmar, certainly the Turi Karta, that first of all, we did go back with the help of the Gentiles. It was a world body, I don't care if some disagreed with it, but the world body by its rules voted us to return. Now, I don't think that the UN did not declare independence. We declared independence and the UN recognized it, but nonetheless the UN did recognize it. We didn't rebel against the world. Right? The Satmar have the very strange position that as long as that because the Arabs object to us being in Israel, we don't belong in Israel. Right? So we have they say we have to wait till for a time so the Arabs don't object to our being in Israel for us to go. If you want to go out and see pigs fly, you can. Anyway, anyway, the point is though that the Miyakum Yaakov means who will help Yaakov get up, right? Kikaton, he's too small. By the time this happens, God, who's going to help them? So Hashem, please, don't do it. So what is Hashem's answer in Pasuk Gimel? Glenn? Nicham. Zion Gimel.
You get the good one.
Okay. I'm giving you a good pasuk.
Nicham Hashem al zos lotziya omar Hashem.
Nisratzi b'tfilasi netali. You have ratzon. Good. I go back on this vision. It's not going to happen. Lotziya omar Hashem. It will not be.
Sometimes the goyim can help build the Beit Hamikdash. Will we be able to use things from the dome of the rock, the gold?
Well, insofar as Islam is not a Avodah Zarah, I don't get all worked up on these things myself, but I know that Arabs who help us build all over Israel, they say, no, we're building for ourselves, we're going to take this. Mm-hmm. So I don't have to speak the same way, but I'll be happy with nothing there. Yes.
You just said that it shall not be. You said the vision shall not be. I mean, my initial reaction is that Israel won't be. It basically is asking about the survival of Yaakov. What I thought of Hashem is saying, Israel will still survive.
Oh, absolutely. But
the vision is you.
The vision is the locusts coming to devour, or everything after the king gets his first dibs. And Amos says that if you do this to Israel, she will not be. No one will be able to lift her up. So Hashem says, "I go back on it." Nicham, lo tihiya. This vision you saw, with the picture you saw of the locusts, shall not come to be. And here and now, I ask you an historical question. There was another Navi in Treyasar. We learned about him in the beginning of the year, at the time of Shabbos Shuvah. Remember, his name is Yoel. Yoel. Yoel's book is dedicated to describing a devastating plague of locusts that will devour the entire land of Israel. He describes it in two lengthy chapters as if though these locusts are soldiers chomping away at every bit of, and it says the worst plague of locusts ever. Remember, we dealt with the plague in Egypt, the eighth plague, how the Bible can say that plague is the worst that will ever be, and in Yoel it says this is the worst plague ever of locusts. Now, most commentaries place Yoel well after Amos. I would, if that is so, I have a serious problem. Here is Amos prophesying a devastating plague of locusts, and then getting a promise from God that it won't happen, and then another Navi has the chutzpah to preempt him, even if it's 60, 70 years later, and refer to just such a plague. So I have two approaches to this. One is that there are some Mefarshim that say that Yoel was before Amos. Alright, so his plague is finished already. Right? But two, my preferable answer, since I do believe that Yoel is quite a bit after Amos, I think he's quite a bit later, is that Yoel is not, remember the Shita? Yoel is not talking about locusts at all. Remember, Yoel talks about four types of locusts. Yelek, Chasil, Gazam, and Arbe. They are four countries, correct. Abarbanel says that the four locusts are actually Bavel, Paras, Yavon, and Edom. Bavel, Babylonia, Persia, Greece, and Rome. So that the four locusts, and now we understand why he describes them as marauding soldiers wiping out the countryside, because that's exactly what they were. Mamish. Okay? So that's how I would explain it. That Yoel is not undoing this first prophecy. Because it would be a real chutzpah for one prophet to describe a devastating locust plague, promise that it's not going to happen, and then God gives and says just that in the hands of another prophet. Not very nice. Okay, right there. Second vision. Okay, Leon, would you like to do Dalit? Kohirani Hashem.
Yeah. Kohirani Hashem.
Hashem Elokim.
Hashem Elokim. Vihinei kore lorid vayesh Hashem Elokim v'tokal et tohom Tahom Rabbah Va'achla et Hakelet.
Very difficult pasuk, but what it is a literally a fire. Korei L'Riv Ba'esh. There will be a devastating fire. That could be even worse than locusts, right? Locusts aren't going to kill anybody, right? And it will devour even to the depths of the earth. Some commentaries actually say that this is another reference to that earthquake. How can an earthquake bring about fire? Now, clearly when you have gas lines, that can happen all the time. But at this time, what brings about a fire and an earthquake? That can happen. It can happen.
Volcano
can happen from an earthquake also, but there aren't so many active volcanoes near Israel. But what can happen is that the great friction in the rocks and the trees can ignite. It can sometimes happen. Fire is spread by earthquakes. So that this could be possibly what he's referring to, because he talks about the fire coming from underground. All right? It would be just an amazing project to find throughout Amos possible hints to the earthquake and the total eclipse. Because he keeps talking about bringing darkness in the middle of the day. About three or four times he's mentioning it. He keeps seeing references to houses crumbling, to the hinges falling off doors. He's using these as predictions so that when people see them happening, they say, oh my goodness, this guy is telling the truth. Right? Here we are 3,000 years later, we can't predict the tsunami, and he's talking and he's giving the precise time for an earthquake. Right? So now we have to predicting this. He says, Omar Hashem Elokim, Chadal na miyakum Yaakov, ki katonu, please God, stop this. Don't do it. Before he said, forgive them. Now he's saying, stop it. This fire is too devastating. He's more emphatic in this one about God not doing it. Nicham Hashem Elzos, gam hilo tihi, Omar Hashem Elokim. All right. This one too. I'll take it. I'll go back on it. It shall not happen. Okay. Arya, would you like to do the third vision? You have it to know there. Pasuk Chet. Zion. The third vision. Okay. Third vision is he sees actually God. Now, I don't know what God looks like. I've never had a dream of God either, but. I've spoken to Christians who say that they dream about God all the time. I've never had Hashem in my dream. Anybody in this room ever in a dream had Hashem in the dream? Right? The reason why Christians have God in the dream is because to them they're constantly looking at right. It's I think we've discussed this before. When someone is pronounced dead on an operating table. They always, if they're brought back to life, we always hear not just in the National Enquirer, but you hear people who actually say, "I saw this great light, and I saw Jesus at the end of the light." Because their brain activity is still working somewhat. The first thing a doctor does when he thinks you're dead is he shines this big light in your eye, right? That's the brain is remembering that. That's the light that you think you're seeing in that memory, right? When you wake up, so you see that great light, and such a person who is. Christians have picked the picture of the one they worship on the wall, over their beds, in the hospitals, over the bed. It's all over the place. And so when you have it constantly in your mind, you may actually dream of such a person, right? So Amos has a vision and there's a picture of God in there. Now, what does that mean? Is it a whirlwind? Is it a George Burns, I don't know, it's hard to imagine what it is. Okay? So he says he's holding an anoch. V'yodo anoch. Manta anoch is a plumb line. Is that what you have in your English?
Yeah.
A plumb line is. An anoch is something you measure. If you want to see how deep the water is, Paro used to go out and then see how far up the Nile is rising, and he would take this 10-foot pole and see what. Like a dipstick and an oil gauge or something.
Well, the plumb line also determines if something's straight.
Good, okay.
If it's vertically straight.
Right. Okay, and here what we're trying to do is just a measurement of something, as we're about to see. And this is interesting as a contrast to a pasuk in Sefer Zechariah, where Zechariah also talks about a man with a measuring Yerushalayim. And there it's for good, because the measurements of Yerushalayim will be so vast. You won't be able to measure Yerushalayim. Here he's doing, look what he's measuring measuring the land for. What do you see there, Amos? So Omar Anoch, I see an Anoch, God.
He didn't tell God that he saw God.
Yeah, I guess I see you holding an Anoch, right? After all, Amos has to, be careful. V'emar Hashem, hineni sam Anoch bekerav ami Yisrael, lo osif od avor lo. Now, Alan, you have the Targum there. Do you see the Targum of the word Anoch? What do you see, Amos? V'amar Hashem li, ma at choze, Amos, v'amareis. What did you see? What? V'amareis din. V'amar Hashem ha ano ave din b'go ami. An Anoch measures a distance. Din is also a type of measure. What do we call when justice is done properly?
Scale.
That's why the scales is a sign of justice. And what else? Mida connected mida. You get this.
Measure,
right?
Measure for measure.
Measure for measure. Okay. Right. Mida tadin. Excellent. Good. So that's why the measurement is translated as din here. Okay, so it could be that he's holding a scale, something that measures. And God says, I have measured out the deeds of these people. Lo osif od avor lo. I cannot overlook them anymore. I can't pass over them anymore. Over al pesha, remember that? Pasuk Micha? No, se'avon ve over al pesha.
What is the foot from the previous where God is saying, yeah, forgive him. Yeah, I forgive him.
Right.
And all of a sudden, boom.
Yeah. This one I'm not forgiving. Yep. Okay, so this is the third vision, and it's going to go on longer. Now that he's saying I'm not forgiving, Amos has another five or six chukim on this. Now a few points of this. He's going to give a very harsh description of the downfall of the ten tribes. And if you recall, the first week we started Amos, about 7, 8, 9 weeks ago, we started with this. Remember when we talked about Amos being told not to give prophecy by the high priest? Remember that? The 65 words and the 65. Mm-hmm. Remember that? He started at the very beginning. Amatzia, the Kohen Gadol, told him, stop talking like this, it's going to get you killed. Right? You talk about the king being killed and the kingdom being lost. And Toch Kedei doing that, he refers constantly to Yitzchak. But he doesn't even call him Yitzchak, he calls him Yitzchak. Boy, Chazal had a very curious sense of humor when they say that Amos had a lisp. Now the word the letter tzaddik does appear in this book, right? Not common. The tzaddik is not a common letter. Hayirutzun, rutzun. You can say if you have a lisp, but yis. I don't know. Actually, there's a Gemara that says he had a list based on a different pasuk, but actually the word Amos itself means hard to speak. Amos means totally burdened. Very burdened, Amos. So, I don't know. Anyway, but if you didn't say it right, I can't believe that that would be a reason enough to not spell it right. Okay, he's making a mockery. He's mocking, but we have to more than explain why it's Yitzchak and not Yitzchak. I'm curious as why he's so rarely, hardly ever in the Bible, is Yitzchak mentioned. Abraham a little more often, but mostly it's Yaakov. Yeah. Yaakov or Yosef, Ephraim, but we never refer to Yitzchak.
Where's
Yitzchak? Test. But I think the reason you have in the English Yitzchak, right? I'm sure it's Isaac, right?
Yes.
So I'm sure that
spelled
in Hebrew. It's spelled differently, yeah.
So who are they referring to?
Hebrew. Yitzchak means will be a mockery. This is so crazy. I never sneeze, and tonight between Mincha and Maariv, we learned about sneezing. Could be. I was talking about what you're supposed to say when someone sneezes. That's what we're up in the encyclopedia. That we're
like. The question is what they're going to dream about tonight.
There's nothing to sneeze at. Okay, so. So the reason why he mentions Yitzchak, and so Yitzchak is because it's a mockery, and he's making a la'ag. But the reason why he says Yitzchak is maybe simple. Look what the pasuk is talking about. He is denouncing the high places, the places of sacrifice of the northern kingdom. Now Yitzchak made of himself a sacrifice. Mm-hmm. So he says, you want to know what a sacrifice is? Go remember Yitzchak. You guys don't know what Yitzchak is. You don't even know how to spell his name. Mm-hmm. Neither do I, for that matter. So okay, so that's why he says the bamos of Yitzchak. Now bamos are illegal altars in Israel. They're called bamos. All the altars in the north are called bamos, right? Mikdash Yisrael Yechravu. The Kamti al Beis Yeravam Becharev. I will come rise against the house of Yeravam with the sword. Now this gets you in trouble. You can't speak this way about the king. Isn't this called treason, right? So that's why. Now this is where we started almost. Yishlach Amatzia Kohen Beis El Yeravam Melech Yisrael Emor. So Amatzia sent a message to Yeravam. Kashar Alecha Amos Beker Beis Yisrael. Kashar means he's rebelled against you. Lo Suchal Ares Lo Chilas Kol Zvarav. We can't stand what he's saying. We won't be able to stand. The people won't. He's weakening the people. You don't need to read Yivalef Kichoma. Now, like all good Lashon Hara, we have to ask, is this really what Amos said? Amos didn't say I'm going to, that Yeravam will die. He said I will rise against the house of Yeravam. At no point does he predict the death of Yeravam. In fact, Yeravam died peacefully. His son, son's kingdom was killed, was destroyed. So he said on the house of Yeravam, which is not necessarily Yeravam himself. Hosea spoke about this also, remember? In the first chapter about those children's names. And the child that's Lo Ruchama will have no pity. That child represented, according to the Mefarshim, the son of this king who would be killed, Zechariah. Okay, not to be confused with the prophet Zechariah. All right, so he says Kicho Amar Amos B'Cherev Yemos Yeravam. So Rashi says that's how Lashon Hara works. Think of it. Who else in Tanakh accused a man of rebelling against the king? Where else? Think of Shmuel Aleph. Who accuses someone of rebelling against the king? Correct. Shaul. Oh, well, David, certainly Shaul is accused of David. With one person, remember the high priest who gave David some food? Remember that? Achimelech.
What about Noah?
Right? So the guy who told on Achimelech, you should see how he embellishes what Achimelech actually did for David. You know what I'm saying? Do you see it's human nature? The king says, go ahead, tell me what he did. Tell me what this person is treasonous person did against me. So the person wants to make brownie points. He's going to say, "Oh, you couldn't believe, you can't believe, can't, oh king, without my help, you can't believe what kind of rebellion he's starting." You hear that? You hear the point? So that's what Amatzia is doing. Vayomer Amatzia el Amos, Jose. He said to Amos, maybe he called him Jose, a prophet. Leich brach v'cha l'eretz Yehuda. Go back to where you come from. And eat your bread there, right? And give your prophecy there. It shows the way they felt prophets were. Mm-hmm. Prophets made a living out of giving good prophecies, right? Eat your bread there and let the people hear what they want to hear. That's what people do. They want to hire a prophet to say good things for them, right? That's why you have to be careful. You know, the prophet, if he has to eat the bread from the people, of course he's going to kiss up to them. But what does Amos say? Vayan Amos vayomer el Amatzia. Simcha, would you read your dollars?
Vayan Amos vayomer el Amatzia, lo nabi anoki, lo ben nabi anoki, ki boker anoki, uvolei shikmi.
Okay, I'm not a Navi. I did not go to school to be a Navi. My father was a Navi. I wasn't raised in a home with a Navi. I don't know what it means to be a Navi. And for your information, pal, I got a job. I don't need bread. Right? I don't need bread in order to survive. I have a job. I make a living. I do not give prophecy for a living like your false prophets, who just kiss up and say what the people want to hear. Right? Okay? Kibokeranofu Bolish Shikmim. I dress sycamore trees and I am a shepherd. As we learned at the beginning of the Sefer, Min HaNoktim, remember? Vayikocheni Hashem Echarei Hatzon. God took me from behind the sheep. Exactly the same pasuk appears by David. And God told me to do this. I don't know from anything about prophecy. I didn't train myself to be prophecy. I never took a course prophecy 101. I don't know the first thing about it. Just God has spoken. Who can't give prophecy? I hear it. He said earlier in chapter 3, Hashem diber mi lo yinoveh. Remember that? God has spoken. Who cannot but give prophecy? Okay. What else am I supposed to do? Perakimo Pasuk 3:8. God has spoken. I have to give prophecy. Okay. So he says, I'll skip half a pasuk before in pasuk Gimel, but he says, "Vatoshma devar Hashem ata omer lo tinovei al Yisrael v'lo tatif al Beis Yischok." You tell me not to give prophecy. You tell me not to speak out against Beis Yischok. Oh yeah. So look what you can't believe this next prophecy, starting with pasuk Yitzayin and ending in the next parak in pasuk Gimel. I don't know what Bishop Langton had in mind when he separated these two chapters here, but really it's all part of the same prophecy. The reason why he separated it is because there's a fourth vision in the middle of the prophecy. But the prophecy in totality has 65 words in it, and it ends inexplicably with this word, Hus! What does it mean there, at the end of verse 3 in chapter 8?
Remove.
What?
Remove.
Ugh. Give me a break. Again, remove? Remove what? Silence! Hus kategor bekach sanegor! Right? I mean, silence.
I don't see why it's
a I'll be killed if this gets out. And he has to give a remez to the 65 years in two ways, the Malbim says. One with Has, Gematria 65, right? And one is that there are 65 words in this prophecy. Now Yeshayahu, who lived in Yehuda, was able to say it outright. He predicts 65 years from now this kingdom shall fall. Now, Alma wasn't afraid to mince words before, but he still feels to actually give a specific date for the downfall of this kingdom, I have to give as a hint. So this prophecy has two elements to it. He predicts that the king, his family, will all be destroyed. They will become harlots, his daughters. I mean, not a pleasant thing to say about a king, right? And your family will die in a land that's not theirs. And then we'll start next week with the fourth vision, which is the beginning of chapter 8. I'd like to finish this book next week. I'd like to finish almost next week. And then after Amos, we did Yoel in the beginning of the year. Okay? We did Yonah also, because it's upon Yom Kippur time. So what I want to do is Ovadia next week. Is that okay? After we finish Amos? Right? And that'll put us nicely perched to do Micha and finish half the book right there. Okay, Ovadia we can also do in one sitting because it's all one chapter. Okay. So you see our schedule? We have the schedule to finish Amos next week. Amos is the end of Amos is a Haftorah. And if I may, I want to give you something to read, if I may. I want to give you something to read for next week.